Chairs No Waiting, episode number 558. George Lindsay, please stand. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the folks over at WeaversDepartmentStore.com. Drop by over at Weavers and check out what they've got. They got a whole section of Mayberry finest stuff at Foley's Market. That's right, you can go to Foley'sMarket.com and head over there and check it out. You can get country bacon, you can get pepper bacon. I always talk about the country bacon. Great bacon. You want to cook it and eat it. You can also head over there and get a Mayberry Police Department zip-up hoodie to wear and keep you warm this winter. Head over to WeaversDepartmentStore.com and check it out. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners like yourself. And tonight's episode, number 558, is brought to you by Adrian Ramey. So thank you, Adrian, and thank you for being here with us. For another episode of Two Chairs No Waiting, we're going to be talking about George Lindsay. You know, I was thinking about it, too. I believe probably George has had as many as anybody from the cast episodes of this podcast done about him. Because, I mean, I guess I knew him well enough. And anyway, there's just so much to tell you about George. And I found a new article. If you're watching the video version of the show, you can actually see behind me that I have been going through the archives because my filing cabinets are open and piles of stuff are on top of my filing cabinets. And I've been going through the archives and I found a nice article about George, and it's actually called "Will the Real George Lindsay Please Stand Up?" But I have a previous episode of the podcast called "The Real George Lindsay," so I didn't want to confuse everybody. But this is from an episode from magazine article from April 1996 in the Baldwin County Current. That's about Goober, George Lindsay himself. So we're going to hear that. I'm going to be doing a lot of reading. So if you don't like episodes where I just read, you know, you're going to not enjoy it. You might want to skip ahead until we get to Randy Turner's section, where we're going to be doing part two of last week's This Week in Mayberry History. If you didn't hear it, that means you need to go back to episode number 557 and listen to Randy, because you don't want to miss it. All right, guys, let's get this thing going. I have got a great story here. I'm going to get us some background music. Let's see here. Let's try this. Let's see how this sounds. Ah, that's nice. That sounds kind of Mayberry-ish, doesn't it? So we're going to have that as our background music. We're going to hear from George Lindsay himself, ladies and gentlemen. You just can't do better than that. So will the real George Lindsay please stand up? This is an article, as I said, from the Baldwin County Current from 1996, the March-April edition. A fella named David Hamburg wrote this article. Some while ago, while planning some stories for this mom and pop issue of the Current, this magazine, the town of Mayberry came to mind immediately. We figured nearly everybody in America who owns a television set has at least seen one episode of the Andy Griffith Show during their lives. I would hope so. During the heyday of the 60s, the most popular situation comedy that was on the air, and now many years later, the king of syndicated repeats. So we decided to pay a visit to George Lindsay, known by millions as Goober, the simple yet able mechanic who worked at Wally's filling station. In Lindsay, we were certain, lived the embodiment of small-town America, the essence of life as we once knew it, but never will again. And boy, were we surprised. Although he's certainly not the flamboyant Hollywood type, Lindsay, sure as shooting, is no simpleton whose idea of Cary Grant imitation is Judy, Judy, Judy. What hit us between the eyes is that we, like most Americans, have been so easily taken in by what we see on TV that we actually believe what we see. We invite these characters into our home every week and become mesmerized into believing that that's really who they are. We look at Goober on the cover of George Lindsay's book, Goober in a Nutshell, his head protected from oil leaks by that Goober hat, his eyes wide open, yet kind of glazed, his mouth agape, his thumbs tucked into his pockets of his work pants, and his pencils, his tire gauge, neatly arranged in his shirt. while his whole physical presence bespeaking a sort of a dumb, sappy interior. And we get suckered into believing that George Lindsay and Goober are one and the same. Well, we know better now. And the most important lesson we learned during our 10 hours at Lindsay's lovely home at the top of a grassy hill in the middle of a cul-de-sac in a beautiful suburb of Nashville is that the idea of engaging Lindsay in a neatly defined question and answer session is simply and wonderfully out of the question. If you were to ask Goober a question, you might get an unconventional answer, but you'd get an answer nonetheless. When you ask George Lindsay a question, you're likely to get a question shot right back at you, or a one-liner that just struck him at that particular moment, and he just had to tell you what it was. Or a sudden urge to try on hats, or even a song. In many ways, Lindsay the adult is like Lindsay the youngster, the prankster who, on sweltering summer days, would join his buddies at the only movie theater in the hometown of Jasper, Alabama, buy some chocolate candy, and then hurl the melting sweets at folks in the front row. Those were not happy times for Lindsay, who grew up dirt poor and compensated for his lack of money and status by making people laugh. His father was luckless and his mother was crippled by problems. And so young George was reared by his grandparents and his doting aunt Ethel. Their best efforts, however, couldn't prevent George from being, well, George. One of his most memorable stunts involved convincing a group of friends to join him in pouring ammonia and peroxide on their own hair. As he describes it in his book, he says, "We were the strangest looking people in Jasper that they had ever seen, and the only ones in town with orange sherbet colored hair. It's a wonder we didn't put our eyes out with that concoction." Although the young Lindsay excelled in swimming and football and even gave the old college try, he always dreamed of being up there on the screen. One thing he had spent hours watching on Saturdays, there on the screen. His Goober in a Nutshell is a moving account of a boy who could have become a rotten apple, as so many youngsters from a dysfunctional background do, yet he didn't. Instead, he discovered that the way to get by was to make people laugh. That's what he does best, and that's what he continues to do, even in interviews. And interviewers who can't do their job because they're too busy laughing. Appropriately, Lindsay's Nutshell dedication is to his son, George, and to his daughter, Camden, of whom he is very proud, and to whom he says, "Thank you for letting me be your dad and silly." What follows is a rather limp attempt to get a few straight answers from George Lindsay. So these are questions and answers, guys. So the question: we grew up with the Andy Griffith Show, and now many years later, we're still watching the Andy Griffith Show. Did you realize at the time how big it would get? George: no, but when I got on it, I got on it in 1964, and it was the number one TV show, and I knew that we were doing something special, and I knew that the people I was working with, they were special. Actually, I guess if we had known we weren't going to get any residuals, I guess we probably would have done it anyway. How popular is the show today? This was in 1996. The Andy Griffith Show is the number one show on all of television, even the world. It has never been off. It's never been out of the top 10. It's never, and now we have 12 million viewers a day. There are over 800 Andy Griffith Show rerun watchers clubs in America, and I don't know, somewhere between 20,000 and 50,000 members. It's become an American icon. They teach it in college. They teach the Andy Griffith Show. Question: I didn't know that. George: North Carolina teaches it. It is used as a teaching tool, and a lot of schools use the show to show real relationships between the father and the son, and that's Andy and Opie. And every show was done, tried to be done, with a moral in each show. So, something which is lacking today, the question here, or is this something that is lacking today, or is it that they just decided that we don't need shows with morals anymore, George? Well, I don't know who they are, so I can't comment on that. What I would like to say is, let's just put this away. I like the old shows better. That's how I'd put it. I liked it when there were cowboys. I did a lot of Gunsmokes. And I had my heroes and stuff. We all know that you can put things geographically. But, you know, that's... So why do you have to do it visually? I mean, you can do it graphically, but you don't have to do it physically. I guess we've come to an end of an era of some of these values. Question. So the family values that we know when we talk about America as shown in the TV in the 50s and 60s is a lot more representative of family values, you think? George says, I think so. But let me ask you a question, and it will probably answer your question. That is, do you think any show running today will be on for 35 years and never be off? Well, in your book, you leave no doubt that Andy Griffith was in charge of the show, that he was a perfectionist, George. Well, first of all, let's take, he's a take charge guy. Secondly, you know, he's a genius when it comes to fixing scripts. He's the best script constructionist I have ever been around. And thirdly, it was his baby. The magazine, the questions now says, what made the show's ensemble cast work so well, George? Well, I guess it's the right chemistry. You know, they took a big chance on putting me in there in place of Jim Nabors, because that represented hundreds of thousands of dollars if I'd gone belly up. So, I don't know. I guess it was the producers, and one of them was Sheldon Leonard, of course, and their innate ability to cast the show. So, I think that's what made it work so well. But the connections you made with the audience, that was something special, George. The biggest thing in our situation was that people thought that we were those people. And we literally were those people. That was us. Now, think about this. Every one of us had college education. Every one of us had lots and lots of television and motion picture experience. And yet we played saps. We played town dunces. We never thought we were funny. You thought that we were funny. It's the image that you see, but you don't see a bunch of people in a town running around, falling down, laughing at each other, you know? So we always went, and Griffith was a genius at this, we went for the situation. There was never a joke in that show, never a joke. And there were never any ad-libs. We learned that stuff word for word, and we studied every weekend. Sometimes we were up 2 hours getting one word right. Lindsay, who graduated from Florence State Teachers College, now the University of North Alabama, attended on a football scholarship and started at quarterback for 2 years. He tried the Air Force briefly after graduation, but eventually he settled for 2 years of intensive actor training at the American Theater Wing in New York City. His first big part was in the play All American. Wow, I didn't know that. A Broadway hit starring Ray Bolger. He went on to appear in countless TV shows including several episodes of The Twilight Zone. Yeah, he was in Twilight Zone. I remember that. He was also in an Emmy-nominated Alfred Hitchcock Presents episode called The Jar, in which he reeled off a sensitive, moving, five-minute monologue as a half-wit named Juki. And, of course, Lindsay was a regular on Hee Haw for more than 20 years. Clearly, there's a great deal more to George Lindsay, the actor, than the role for which he is best known. And even though Lindsay describes his goober alter ego as my, quote, cross to bear, end quote, he still plays to the crowds every year all over the country who want to see Goober. The man just likes to make people laugh and sometimes cry. So here's the question. You find humor in everything, don't you, George? Everything except this interview. He laughs. Just joking. I wrote a line where I said, I was married a long time. We were married so long, we were on our second bottle of Tabasco sauce. I don't really think I have a sense of humor. And I've been told that I'm an introvert, that I hide a lot behind a mask of an actor and of an entertainer. So I'm curious about what it is inside of you as a young person that tells you, I want to be on stage in front of a lot of people, or that's what I'm going to be. George says, I had no doubt that I ever was not going to be. I always thought I was going to be. But how can you? The question. I don't know. A guy went to the eye doctor and the doctor said, have your eyes ever been checked? And the guy said, no. They've been brown as long as I can remember. A lady calls up the fire department and says, come quick, my house is on fire. Fire department says, how do we get there? She says, ain't y'all still got that red truck? So the question from the interviewer says, do you ever long for the ability to go out and not be recognized? And George says, uh-huh. Any actor who says that it's that is not telling the truth. Mm-mm. Yeah, he likes it. I think actors live by, I don't know, every day of my life, I get up and I get somebody that says, thank you for bringing so much laughter to my children's home and my home and my grandparents' home and my great-grandparents' home. For a lot of people, we, and I say the Andy Griffith Show and Hee Haw, are the only entertainment they had. We were a part of their lives. Question. Yes, you would come into your own home. And we'd feel like we knew you if you came into our home. And George says, but you know me as Goober, not as George. Guy says, right. We don't really know you. And of course, you don't know who we are. George. Yes, I do. I had all of you investigated before you came here. I want to know. I'm not really happy about a lot of it. Question. Okay, speaking of Goober, how have you been able to finally accept him? George, I think coming to Nashville had a lot to do with it because they're more attuned to the kind of humor that I do. And also, I started to realize when I got down here, people were saying, hello, Goober, or hey, Goober, at church and the grocery store and everywhere. I went up to the Baptist Hospital one day and I was visiting some people and giving out Goober pictures, and this little girl had her third brain tumor. And she said, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me, getting a Goober picture. And I said, he's okay. Talking about Goober. I wanted to be, you know, I really wanted to be Rex Harrison and all that, you know. I wanted that kind of career, but I don't have that kind of career. So why not make the best of the thing in the career that I do have? I missed the train somewhere, but I really believe this is, and I believe this with all my heart. If I hadn't been on the Griffith Show, it would have been something else. I really think that I have something to contribute to show business and acting profession. Always wanting to keep up with the times, Lindsay says he'd like to branch into other areas. He's acted and he's directed. He's even cut a song or two. Now he says he'd, quote, like to do a story of Chaucer and rap. Warming up to the task, he recites his autobiographical rap. My name is George with a capital G. You think I'm dumb, but I'm on TV. I had a real great part. I had a real great start. Me and Andy. And I live in Mayberry. Now that's... Now to do the rap's not that hard. It's easy to do. Just look in the mirror like I tell you to. Screw up your face with a big goober grin and say Judy, Judy, Judy. Then do it again. Let's do it. Little goober rap. Yo. Such shenanigans were only a small part of the real George Lindsay. He's also hospitable and generous, and not only with his jokes and reflections, but also with his time. When we knocked on his door, we figured the following was in store: a tour of his spacious, you know, neatly kept home, an interview, and some photos. Finally, of course, we'd be shown to the door. But once again, we were caught off guard. Following our conversation, Lindsay invited us to pile into his car and then drove us to a cute mom-and-pop restaurant in Nashville called Dotson's, where Lindsay chowed down on an assortment of vegetables, his favorite meal, and recommended to us the barbecue chicken. It was an odd sensation walking into a place and feeling the eyes of other customers on Lindsay and on us, his not-so-famous entourage. He happily engaged some folks in chit-chat and readily signed autographs. Next, there was a stop at the outdoor pumpkin stand where Lindsay struck up a conversation with a friend. When we got back to Lindsay's home, he invited us to shoot some baskets in his backyard hoop and talked us into three games of horse. The basketball needed some air and the rim was too tight, and so Lindsay blanked us 3-0. Later, we sat and watched some Andy Griffith reruns and various other shows with Lindsay on his television. Some included Lindsay and some didn't. One particularly funny show featured Pat Boone displaying his expertise as a lassoer. When Boone lassoes whirled a bit too high and knocked off his toupee, we all laughed till we cried. But the most surreal sensation was sitting there with Lindsay, listening to the familiar whistling of the Andy Griffith tune at the beginning of each episode and thinking, it's not everyone who gets to watch Andy Griffith reruns with Goober. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the story. I hope you enjoyed it because it gives you a little insight into George. I always experienced what this writer experienced. George was always on when you were around him, and it was hard to get him to carry on a serious conversation with you, because he wanted to tell you funny stories, and he did have things just pop into his mind. Ken Junkin, our Otis tribute artist, loves to tell the story that when George was being inducted into the Alabama Stage and Screen Hall of Fame, dressed in his tuxedo, ready to go on stage with all the other dignitaries that are about to take the stage, and he was going to be presented this huge honor. George came running across the area when he saw Ken Junkin and his group, and came running over there to him and said, Ken, do you know what the decision was that George Washington had to made before he crossed the Delaware? Well, no, he said, is to wade or swim. That may not be the right joke. The point is, he had to come over to tell a joke. Here he is about to go on stage, and George ran over to Ken to tell him the new joke he had just heard, because that's who George was. And George, we love you and we miss you, and you'll always be in our hearts. I promise you that. All right, folks, we now get to go hear the part two from this week in Mayberry history from last week. So go back and listen to last week's if you have not heard it. But let's head back over and hear from Randy Turner for this week in Mayberry history.
Welcome to This Week in Mayberry History, a report by special correspondent Randy Turner of the Gomer and Cooper Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild of the Mayberry Historical Society.
Last week, we discussed the career of character actor George Petrie, who starred in several old-time radio series and appeared most often in television in the Jackie Gleason Show, including the Honeymooner skits and the eventual standalone show. We concluded with George's first appearance in the Andy Griffith Show in 1961 as Joe Layton, the thief in crime-free Mayberry, who was surprised after cracking the Mayberry Bank safe to find Andy sitting inside waiting for him, having entered through the side door to the safe that was installed after the vault combination was lost. George had become a popular character actor in television at this point, appearing in numerous series, such as Bachelor Father, Rawhide, Combat, 77 Sunset Strip, and The Real McCoys. In 1963, George both appeared in the original version of The Twilight Zone and had the distinction of playing Eddie Haskell's father, George Haskell, on Leave It to Beaver. The following year, George returned to The Andy Griffith Show in the role more immediately recognizable to Mayberry fans. In the fourth season episode, A Deal is a Deal, George played Lenny, a co-owner of the Miracle Salve Company, who was only too happy to gather all the Miracle Salve he could and send it to Opie Taylor Sr. George also appeared in an episode of Gomer Pyle USMC in 1966. All through this time, George still periodically did radio, as he had since 1942, even though the golden age of radio had passed, being generally considered to have ended in 1962. George was still performing regularly through 1966. Between 1966 and 1969, George appeared in 10 episodes of the new Honeymooner skits and the rebooted The Jackie Gleason Show, but as different characters, not the recurring character he had originally played in the 1950s. Between 1979 and 1991, George appeared in the role for which he is likely best known to modern audiences, playing J.R. Ewing's attorney, Harv Smithfield, in 52 episodes of Dallas. Among his many television roles during this time, George appeared in the 1984 episode of Three's Company, reuniting with Don Knotts, who played landlord Ralph Furley. George appeared as Mr. Williams, an inspector who worked for Bart Furley's management company. Bart was Ralph Furley's cruel, backstabbing brother. Bart was not seen in the episode in which George appeared, but when he was seen in the series, he was played by Hamilton Camp, who was the prisoner who helped Mayberry's barbershop quartet win a competition in one of the color episodes. After having appeared in the original Twilight Zone series in 1963, George had the distinction of also appearing in the new version of the show in 1986, in a segment which also featured William Shallert, Mayberry's own Quiet Sam. In 1987, George had small roles in two hit films, Baby Boom, starring Diane Keaton, and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, starring Steve Martin and John Candy. George reprised his role as Eddie Haskell's father in the new Leave It to Beaver, which aired during the 1987-1988 season. But Eddie Haskell's dad, Ralph Cramden's boss in The Honeymooners, and J.R. Ewing's attorney in Dallas were not the only recurring characters George ever played. He played characters seen more than once in the series St. Elsewhere, Hard Copy, Wise Guy, and Herman's Head. The final series in which he played a recurring character was near the end of his acting career. After first appearing as an elevator operator in 1994, George was brought back as the recurring character Sid in 9 episodes of Mad About You between 1994 and 1996. George's final role was in November 1996, when he reprised his role as J.R.'s attorney in the TV movie Dallas, J.R. Returns. George finally succumbed to lymphoma, which he'd been battling, passing away on November the 16th, 1997, which was actually on his 85th birthday. But that's it for this week. As always, thanks for listening, and remember to take Andy's advice and go out there and act like somebody.
Thank you, Randy. And wow, if you want to make sure you don't miss out on any of what Randy's doing on the internet, head over to your email to Tanya and send him an email at turnersgrade@gmail.com. turnersgrade@gmail.com. And he'll make sure you don't miss out on any of the great Mayberry stuff he's doing. Folks, I hope you've enjoyed this and getting to know a little bit more about George Lindsay. I will put some links in our show notes to articles about George. There's a nice biography on him on the University of North Alabama's website. And there's also a really nice one in a thing called the Encyclopedia of Alabama, where they talk about George. If you'd enjoy getting to know more about George Lindsay, there's a lot here on the podcast. As I said, he's probably been featured more often than any of the other cast members. And that's probably just because I knew him. But he was even featured, and I didn't mention, on the very first episode of Two Chairs, No Waiting. He was my star. He was the guy. So I really miss George. Great guy. And he's missed. But wow, what some amazing, amazing memories that we have. Friends, I'd love to hear from you. You can give me a call at 888-684-8415. And if you got to meet George and have memories of him, I'd like to hear those. I'd love to hear your voice, but you can just email me at floyd@imayberry.com. I'd love to hear from you. However you'd like to. If you forget those things, you can get them all by going over to twochairsnowaiting.com and clicking on the contacts at the top. Actually, it's the about and then contact. It's just got all the information in it. You'll be able to go there and call me. All that stuff is there. Easy to get to and stuff. So, folks, until next time, thanks for being here with us at Two Chairs, and we'll see you then.